Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to www.rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The Council of Canadians has been at the forefront to protect our country's water and to make access to it a human right. They say that the supply of accessible fresh water is diminishing at a troubling rate. The Council says that climate change, industrial farming, and the dumping of waste into our waterways are all growing threats to our diminishing water supplies. Their report, Blue Betrayal, published this spring, examines the record of the Harper Conservative government on fresh water protection. To talk about their findings, we are joined by Emma Louis. She is water campaigner for the Council of Canadians. Hello, Emma.
Hi, Esther.
Now, it's often quoted that Canada holds one-fifth of the world's water supply. But what does this really mean?
That's a good question. I think it's important to raise is that the one-fifth is if we were to drain all lakes and rivers. And so, obviously, we wouldn't want to do that. But I think when people hear that stat, it kind of plays into what Maud Barlow, the author of the report, calls the myth of abundance, in that, you know, when people hear that stat, they think we have a lot of water, and we do to some degree, but it's important to think about, you know, how we can access it, if we can access it, whether it's fresh water, whether it's clean, whether it's drinkable. And oftentimes we have this idea, the myth of abundance, that we have a lot of it and we'll never run out. And so governments often base their policies and decisions in terms of how they approve water withdrawals, whether they approve certain pipeline projects or other projects that risk or present risk to our drinking water, and they really play into this idea that we will never run out, and that's really raising huge concerns for us and for many people in communities where they're seeing their water resources and their water availability really drop.
So climate change is the overarching environmental threat of our time. How does climate change impact the water supply in Canada?
It has, in certain areas, we're seeing lowering lake levels. For example, in the Great Lakes, particularly in Lake Huron, people who live on the shores of Lake Huron have really seen their water levels drop in the last few years. That's one way. I think it's also impacting, you know, we are seeing lakes and rivers throughout Canada and Indigenous communities really essentially drying up. We're also seeing, I'm just recently moved to Vancouver, and I know that the winter has been particularly dry, so low snowpack could definitely impact water availability in the future. And so, you know, we see it in different ways. There's also extreme weather events, so flooding in the prairies is one example of climate change. And so we see these different examples throughout Canada and in Indigenous communities.
And the report also talks about the negative effects of the lack of protection for fresh water from the St. Lawrence River to the Great Lakes. Can you highlight a few that speak to the scale of the water deterioration?
Well, I think it's important to, you know, to talk about how protections have been removed over the years. We saw the Harper government got a lot of our environmental legislation, particularly in 2012, but even leading up to that, particularly in 2012, we saw the gutting of environmental legislation such as the Navigable Waters Protection Act, where 99% of the lakes and rivers no longer had protections under that act. that really impacted Indigenous communities and their lands and water rights as well. We saw the gutting of the Fisheries Act, a recent regulation within the last year or so, where now the deleterious materials can be deposited into fish-bearing lakes and rivers, where 50% of the fish die at 100% of the concentration over a 96-hour period. That's the threshold. And so you can definitely argue that even before that threshold, there can be impacts on fish and lakes and rivers. We saw the changes to the Canadian Environmental Assessment Act cancel 3,000 environmental assessments. And so just a really big concern about how the federal government plans to protect our lakes and rivers without adequately assessing projects that are moving forward. And so we see pipelines being exempted from the Navigable Waters Protection Act, and I think that's one huge example. A major pipeline project some of your listeners may know is Energy East, that runs from Alberta and would transport tar sands oil across to the east, and it would cross 961 waterways, so posing a risk to 961 waterways and communities along the route.
I understand that, for example, since all this deregulation has happened, that 25% of the belugas in the St. Lawrence River now have cancer, and they're disappearing at alarming rates?
Well, and that's another huge concern, and part of that is related to, part of our concerns are related to the Energy East project, where TransCanada was wanting to build a shipping dock near Kakuna, and they ended up canceling the project, but it still raises concerns about future projects and impacts on the beluga as well. There was, last year, there was two shipments of tar sands that went on the St. Lawrence River that were the first ever, and they went ahead without a federal environmental assessment. It was also a project by Suncor, where they were transporting tar sands crude by rail from Alberta to a storage facility just outside of Montreal in the town of Sorel Tracy. And there they transported tar sands bitumen across the St. Lawrence, and one shipment went to Spain, Italy, that area, and then the other one went to the Gulf. And so they went forward, as I mentioned, without federal environmental assessment. They stopped because of the low price of oil, but we do expect them to move forward once the price changes again, and those projects can really set a precedent for other projects that have been planned. There's another plan for an oil terminal just on Lake Superior, and the plan was to build an oil terminal transporting tar sands throughout the Great Lakes, which raises really huge concerns for many communities around the Great Lakes. So just some major threats that we're seeing without proper federal regulation or safeguards.
And the Great Lakes already are quite polluted even before these developments.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of threats to the Great Lakes. Climate change is one of them. We also see invasive species, what we call extreme energy projects overall. So that's energy projects that are more water intensive, more impactful on the environment and communities. So tar sands pipelines and shipments would be one. Fracking around the Great Lakes in Pennsylvania, Michigan is probably the state with the most fracking happening. Ontario, there's concerns that fracking is going to start happening. It's not happening right now. Council of Canadians is trying to get a ban on fracking in Ontario. So just some major concerns about what's already happening around the Great Lakes.
The Harper government's kind of muzzling of science, how has that impacted the water research?
Well, it's definitely impacted water research in that, you know, that we've heard from some scientists where they're afraid to speak out, where they're not able to speak out, where they have to get permission to speak to media. We also see that, you know, there's different ways where the Harper government has tried to muzzle scientists, also through cutting funding for different water research programs. The Experimental Lakes is one where they're, you know, a world-renowned research center. They did some really groundbreaking work on acid rain, on household pollutants, on mercury contamination, and it cost $2 million to fund the Experimental Lakes area, and the Harper government just has decided not to fund it anymore, also cutting programs like the National Roundtable on the Environment and the Economy, so that also cuts to programs within Fisheries and Oceans and Environment Canada as well throughout the years. So, you know, what we're really hoping for, there's the federal election coming soon, and we're really hoping that people make this an election issue, that they tell their MPs and their election candidates how important water is, and that we need funding for research, and that we need the protections put back on through environmental legislation.
And is there anything else that we can do to protect our waters?
Definitely. We're asking people to participate in our Pledge to Protect Our Lakes and Rivers campaign, and that's highlighting the 99% of the lakes and rivers that are no longer protected under the Navigation Protection Act. We're asking people to go to their local lake or river to learn about their drinking water source and to take a photo. It's a photo campaign that we started in March for World Water Day and running through the summer, and take a photo, tweet it to your member of parliament, to the election candidate in your riding, and tell them that you want protections put back on your local lake and river, and people can learn about that at canadians.org/pledge-to-protect. We're also asking people to tell their MPs and election candidates that they want a national water policy. The last federal water policy is really out of date, needs to address current issues such as fracking, the growth of tar sands development. With the national water policy, we're asking for recognition of the right to water, recognition of Indigenous water rights, adequate funding for water and wastewater infrastructure. There, we did a report earlier this year as well that showed there were 1,838 drinking water advisories in place in Canada as of the end of January. So a very large number of drinking water advisories, many of them in First Nation communities that have been in place for many years, some 5 years, 10 years, some even up to 18 years, so adequate funding is really important. And then legally binding drinking water standards. So all of that rolled into a national water policy is critical for protecting our drinking water.
Okay, Emma, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much.
I've been speaking with Emma Louis. She is a water campaigner for the Council of Canadians.